Welcome back to Gayborhood. I'm your host, Ed Wilson, and today I want to ask, what's it like to be an adorable, gay, French-Canadian with an autistic brother, a Catholic family, and a love for colourful hair and acrylic nails, among other things? High on love from his recent gay wedding and marriage, with a special topic of eating disorders, comes Chuck Pelletier. He pronounces it properly in French, so I'm just going to get it wrong one more time. And Chuck is an ex-client of mine. He's just a delightful human being. As with all of my ex-clients, we've been on a big human journey together. And I think that the warmth and the honesty and the realness comes through. I really love presenting my ex-clients in episodes, particularly just as beautiful, warm, connective, open, gay men that they are. Side note, in this one, I reveal a little story about a seven-year-old has read or has had read to them the A Gay Man book. It was a bit shocking for me, a bit difficult, a bit strange, a bit unusual. And we also talk body image in gay culture, which is kind of the big deal. So if you're out there listening and you got a funky, interesting relationship with your body, I think there'll be a part of this episode that will be feel very relevant for you. As always, enjoy the heck out of it. Me and Comet wish you a lovely day and a wonderful listening experience. Take excellent care of yourself. Have fun, and I'll see you at the end. Welcome back to Gayborhood, the podcast bringing us closer to each other and ourselves, one gay at a time. Today, we are meeting my friend Chuck Pelletier. He's French-Canadian and he's going to help me correct his name, but he loves to go by Chuck. Howdy, Chuck. Welcome to Gayborhood.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Hooray. Let's start with introductions. So we go by Chuck, but just say your name properly for all the francophones out there.
My name is Charles Pelletier. So Charles Pelletier. I'm French Canadian. I'm 38 years old. Mm-hmm. God, I'm old.
Oh, don't say that. There'll be listeners who are much older.
Yeah, well, it's
you're gonna offend them.
I don't want to offend them, but it's always a little bit of a sore spot of my age. But anyway.
Maybe we'll dig into that.
Yeah. I live in the north of Canada in the province of Quebec. So with my accent, you can hear that I'm French-Canadian, like I said. I just got married last week.
Hooray. Congratulations.
To the love of my life, Raphael.
Felicitations.
Yes, we've been together for 12 years, and we live in a beautiful house. We have a dog named Luna, a Great Dane. Mm-hmm. She's 6 years old, and she's our baby. She's small. She's only 140 pounds.
Ah, gorgeous.
But I still call her my baby. But other than that, I love to travel, and I speak three languages, so that's about it.
What's the third one?
Spanish. I speak French, English, and Spanish.
Oh, very nice. Cool. You can get just a ton of the world with that.
Well, most of the America, in Canada, we have both language. We have French and English.
Yeah.
They're both official language. I'm not going to shock you saying that mostly we speak French in the province of Quebec and the next province after it, New Brunswick. But still, there's a little bit of French here and there, but mostly it's in English. So speaking both languages, it's a way to be patriotic. I'm happy to say I'm Canadian. I'm happy to say I'm a Quebecer. I'm from Quebec. And also when you travel to the States or to Mexico, as I'm going to be in my honeymoon, well, it's always a plus when you can speak a little bit of the language in Spanish or in English.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It helps you feel more connected to a place. And when you study a language, you feel like you're learning the culture at the same time, right?
And you feel closer to the people also.
Definitely.
So you can say it, even if you think you have nothing in common, but just the fact that you're trying to learn their language. It's like, I'm trying to be really respectful when I have someone English speaking, trying to speak French, because I'm not going to lie, speaking French is hard.
Yeah.
And when I speak in English, it's not the same thing at all as speaking in French.
Yeah.
I think we speak of a lower tone in French than in English. And in English, for reason I do not know, it's like smoother. So I enjoy speaking both, but it brings out different side of my personality.
Yes. I'm actually, just to talk about me just for a second, which is a joke because I talk about me all the freaking time. I am actually slightly bilingual myself. I spent 2 years in Japan and I speak Japanese.
Wow.
And sometimes I make this dramatic reveal that sometimes I think like part of my soul still lives in Japan. But I was 14 turning 15 the first year.
Wow.
So it was very formative years. But yeah, my friends had a good go at me and laughed at me because I have a Japanese laugh. And my Japanese laugh sounds like, ooh, no, that was too high. It's like, ooh, like it's like that.
Yeah, I could see why they did that.
Oh, okay, sure. So you're into, you think it sounds dumb. Good for you.
But
get out of my podcast.
But I'm very impressed because we were talking of future trip, my husband and I.
And
we were talking, yes, and still not used to it, by the way. But we were talking about going to Japan and how the culture and the society is so different. But
sure is.
I think it's like they're living the year 2050. It's like they're so advanced. It's crazy technology.
And simultaneously to Westerners like us, we can easily perceive them as living like socially in the 1900s.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get that. So a social point of view. Yes.
It's a very interesting evolving dynamic. I think Japan, Korea, and soon China, a lot of different Asian countries are experiencing this, that their traditional social norms are really slamming into modern society. They've done a great job of picking up capitalism, business, modern technology, integrating with globalized systems. But their social norms are... Well, I don't know the answer to this. They are meeting Western norms, and it's interesting how it's evolving because obviously the systems and technologies introduced by the West are kind of Western. What's the word? It's like pre-made with the West in mind. It's aligned more, you might say. Anyway, it's all a big boiling hodgepodge, and they make their own versions of businesses and business culture but family life and say women's expectations and just norms are just really struggling to catch up. The gays as well. This is a gay podcast. Gay stuff is well behind in basically all of Asia. We do pretty well in Taiwan, but other than that, Thailand, pretty good, but they're all a bit different. Anyway, I digress. That is a fascinating topic, and I'm actually going to write down that I really want an Asian guest who like is pretty familiar with a lot more of Asia, or at least one country.
I enjoy the video of a YouTube channel. It's called Tokyo Bottom. It's I think the guy's Chinese and the guy's English, and they showed the gay life in Japan and to try to educate and everything.
Is he a bottom? Is that why it's called Tokyo Bottom?
I think so. But it's really interesting because there's a lot of education about how it is in Japan and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm traveling without leaving my seat. So I enjoy that kind of video a lot. And they try to indicate the most like how is it and how is it different.
Very being, cool.
Because the guy from England, I think, is white. So it's different and people don't treat him as...
Yes.
And he speaks very well in Japanese, but because he's a foreigner, he doesn't get treated as somebody else. And the other guy is Chinese, so even him is treated different. So it's really interesting, and it's a lot of fun. So,
nice recommend. I could talk for hours about those subjects, you know, personally also having experienced it. But yeah, it's weird how... you know, me and you live in societies where the color of your skin is far less of a determinant of how people will treat you. Mm-hmm. Racism and unconscious bias and stuff is still very real in both of our countries. But In Asia, it's like a whole next level. Like monoculturalism is basically the norm, and then there's people trying to squeeze in around the edges. Again, you know, what we consider regular modernity slamming into their cultural, social norms that have been around for a very long time. And, you know, multiculturalism, quite new to them.
Yeah.
If it's even there at all.
Yeah, exactly. But that's one of my weaknesses. I love to speak about travel, so you'll have to stop me.
Yeah, I'm going to wrench us back. Ready? How was the wedding? Why'd you get married?
I got married because it was something that was important for me. It was part of my values. I had really like family value, and I wanted to really to show the world that I found, I would say, my soulmate in a sense. And we've been together for 12 years since 2011. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as a big deal, meaning, oh, we've been recently together. We had a lot of hardship, and that just seemed like the next natural step for us. Mm. And I planned the wedding in 6 months because when I got the date, we were going to City Hall, but I still had to find a cake, find a photographer, find something to wear, fix the gifts for the guests. And I would tell you it was the most beautiful day of my life. Mm. And out of 10, if I would rate it out of 10, it would be a 15.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It started raining a little bit when we were doing pictures.
Yeah, that's just the angels crying because it's so beautiful.
Well, we have a tradition that when it's crying, when it's raining, it means that it's going to give you luck for your wedding.
Good.
And just before we went to eat at a restaurant in the city where I live, we had a double rainbow. So it was like this most magical stuff. It was just a magical day. Hooray. And everything. And my parents were there, of course. They drove like 5 hours to share the moment with us. My aunt also. So we weren't all a big wedding. We were like 15, but it wasn't a question of number. It was a question of the quality of the guests and to make sure we had people that love us and share support for this really important day for us.
Yeah, lovely. Congratulations. I'm glad it was so great. So just to summarize, it felt right for you, as in making a grand gesture of love and commitment to each other at this point in your life felt like, what would you say, personally and culturally significant and important to you to be recognized as husbands, to wear a ring each?
We were already wearing our ring that we found a couple of months earlier, but
just on the street, you just found rings. No,
we bought it in a cute little shop.
Okay,
and
that's what you meant. You bought them earlier.
We bought our rings earlier.
Not just found.
So we're wearing them even though we weren't officially married.
Right,
but. Like, we live in in Canada, it's pretty liberal. So it wasn't like there weren't no risk. And to some people, even some straight people that I know, they don't want to get married. And that's fine. Each path is different for everybody.
Yeah.
But me and Raphael, it's like the first time, the first date we went through, at the end of our date, I look at him. And I thought to myself, this is the guy I'm going to marry, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life with him.
Oh.
So it was a conviction, and he blows me away. And people keep telling me, oh, you know, you've just been together for 6 months. You're gonna not fall out of love, but you're gonna get a routine and stuff's going to happen. And we've been together for 12 years, and you know, it still knocks the socks right off me. I can say I love him. We're the kind of couple that people hate because we're like so much in love. Cute. And people are like, it's kind of pissed people off, but in a funny way, of course.
Yeah, nice. And you don't mean anybody any harm.
No. And say we're really graceful, and we don't push like, oh, we've been together for 12 years.
Yeah.
Say we don't push our success to anybody. But I think we aspire people. It's like, it can happen to anybody, straight, gay, bi, whatever. It can happen to anybody. And because in 2023, it's really hard to, with the dating apps and everything, to really keep that connection going and really find the person that you want to spend time with and to cherish that relationship.
Yeah, very nice. I'm very, very happy for you. And you're still very clearly so full of love.
Yes, I kind of walking on a cloud right now.
Still, yeah, I can tell.
And that's what I was going to tell you. Maybe I'm going to be like really cloudy.
Yeah.
But it's like there's so much stress organizing. And when it's done, you're like, oh, thank God, yes.
Yeah, nice.
So you're kind of like floating afterwards. But it's a nice feeling.
Lovely, lovely. So let's jump into your gay life backstory and history. When, if ever, did you realize that you were different?
In our family, I started to feel different when I was a teenager, but I always felt different because I had a brother who was autistic. So by having someone as close as my younger brother different, well, people would look at us, would judge us sometime. And I think we go back to in the 90s. So being autistic wasn't like as well known, and there wasn't even as research. So if we go back to me, when I realized that I was different, I didn't have that, I wouldn't say compulsion, but I didn't have this need to talk to girls or to try to impress them. And say all my friends were guys. And say when a girl tried to kiss me, I'm like, oh, gross, a girl. Like, no.
Cool. So what age roughly? So are you saying you didn't feel a need to contort or change yourself because having an autistic brother made you feel like being different wasn't a big deal and that you could definitely be different?
Exactly. And I was, I think I was in my teens, early teens.
Yeah, right. And that's so very, it's very different to a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, because having did, and I love him to pieces, but having like an autistic brother, his name is Steve.
Yeah.
Well, it changes the nature of the family. It's like and I don't mean it as a bad way, but we were never seen as a normal family.
Yeah.
So we didn't have the same expectation, the same, say, higher standards than other families had. So we had to get used to a new normal, so everything in our family, whatever happened, we had a bigger understanding. Okay. And it wasn't just my brother. We were always like meeting other families that had children with autism or mentals issues. So we were not confronted, but at a very young age.
Exposed to.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. We were exposed to it. So it was just part of who I am, how I was built.
That's cool. And, you know, I know a bit about you, Chuck. You're technically an ex-client. Outing you there, which I got your permission for before the show, dear listeners. You have dyed your hair a shocking pink and you like to wear fingernails as well, acrylic fingernails. So, you know, you're pretty different.
Yes, but now my hair is purple.
Purple now. How's that going?
Because I love it. But
do purples have more fun?
No, because I was a blonde. I dyed my hair blonde just before to change the colors.
Do blondes have more fun?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
they do. Oh, okay, they do. Good to know. What about more than pink?
Yes, more than pink.
Oh, wow. Okay, blonde still at the top. Good job, blondes.
But it was funny because my mom, she stayed 3 days for the wedding, and she told me we went to all kind of big, we went shopping, and she's like, I can't imagine having so much people like look at your hair. And I'm like, mom, I'm a kind of like a chubby guy with like purple hair with a big beard. I'm gonna attract attention, but the important thing, it doesn't matter. And I concentrate on how much people tell me, I love the color of hair, I love your nails, where do you get it done? And so people are very gracious, and even if I have sometime a little bit of negative pushback on that.
And you do, right?
Yes, you told me that
that has happened.
Yes, but that's what I'm happy. It's like that it evolved from the point where we were working together to now. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but I'm just not giving a shit anymore. Yeah. Like, nice. Obviously, it's like, we want to be liked, we want to be loved, we want to have positive, like, encounters with people and kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I concentrate on the positive, and when there's negative, I'm like, oh, that's his opinion.
Yeah.
He's allowed to, but that doesn't change who I am or how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
So I'm keeping my power to myself.
Would you say you let it be their problem?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because this wasn't always true. Because you came to me just to insert some coachy chat for a second.
Yes, of course.
You know, this was a dilemma for you. And even you. And you said you've grown up with an autistic brother. Difference was something we were exposed to. But still, your personal journey of self-expression, gender expression, sexuality expression. You know, I don't know what words you like to use for all of this stuff, but let's just put it in a big bucket. Yeah, even for you, this was still a journey, and you're finding your courage to say, if people dislike my truth, that can be their problem. This is merely my truth, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm just trying to live the way that feels right for me.
When I had the chance to encounter you, I was like, for the first time in 35 years, I dyed my hair and I had the color that I wanted. So I was happy that I made that decision, but I think I was still nervous and I wasn't as used to. And now it's my second time coloring my hair.
Yep.
And I'm better prepared, and definitely, I know how people's gonna. So that it is, but it was a beautiful experience, and I needed to go through that to be able to, like, really accept, like, that I was queer.
Yeah.
Like, even if I identify as a gay man, I feel comfortable saying that I'm queer.
Yeah.
And having nails and and my hair color, it's just part of who I am, and I'm happy with it. And it brings me so much joy and so much happiness that even if there's a few negative reactions, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Seriously.
And not only that, but it's their opportunity to confront difference, right? You might be one of the first people to shock them with, I'm a big boy with a big beard and nails and pink hair. Hello.
Yeah. And the girls just adore me because they want to know where I get my nails done.
Yeah,
and
cool.
See where we start talking about hair. And so it's a really positive experience. And I don't always going to have my hair colored, but I did it for the wedding. So I had, like, really purple. I think you saw me early on with the purple hair, and it's kind of dyed of different kind of shade of purple. And I got, like, purple nails with a few of stones on it, so it was really beautiful.
Nice.
And
could we use a photo of you a groom at the wedding in the Instagram post of the podcast episode? Yes, everyone will get to see it.
And my best friend, which she was my witness, she's the one who placed my hair. I looked like an elf. Like, she put it was like a kind of a Viking kind of hairstyle, and it was beautiful, and she only used, like, 4 elastic, but it was the most beautiful hairstyle that I ever got, and I shared that moment with my best friend, so I was really happy about it.
Nice. Did you feel beautiful?
I felt beautiful. Yay. And even though I'm a chubby guy and I had problem with my weight and accepting it, it was, like I said, it was the most beautiful day of my life, and I kind of, like, forgot all the rest.
15 out of 10.
I just had to kiss my husband and everything felt all right.
Yeah. Nice. So what about the gay stuff? You had an autistic brother, so you were doing a lot of difference. At some point, I'm going to share about, there's a crossover in my life that's happened about autism and gayness. But I just want to ask first, when did you realize that part of your difference was an attraction to fellow males? And can we just confirm, just straight, you prefer the pronouns he, him, you feel like a gay man, and also queer?
I feel
anything else?
Yes. My pronouns, I say it's he, him, mm-hmm. but I have this friend, she's 70 years old,
yeah.
and she knits, and we talk about knitting, and her son is gay also, and she preferred to use she and feminine pronouns. Oh,
about her own son, her grandson.
About her own son, but because she loves me nearly as a son, she used feminine pronouns
okay. for me. In and a fun, in a fun, inclusive way.
Yeah, and she was. It wasn't a form of disrespect. Mm. It was just the way she showed love.
Yeah, recognition.
It was easier for her. Yeah, it was easier for her to use feminine pronouns.
Okay, cool.
And I never got offended by that, and okay. I really wanted to share that because I knew it came from love.
Yeah,
and she's awesome. She's 70 years old, and she knits, and she gives everything that she knits. So she's really a big inspiration for me, and I love her to pieces. So,
oh, nice! Yeah. Very cool. So when for you it became gay stuff, like oh, I like boys. When did you come out? Was there a particular year? What was it like?
That's a really interesting question because my coming out was a little bit, it was stolen from me.
Okay.
And it's something I didn't really talk about because it's in the past and there's nothing you can do about it.
Was it a hurtful, difficult experience?
I would say there's a little bit of anger because coming out is a really personal decision.
Yeah.
You want, and that's why we all, that's what we all hear, that it's your time. It's you that decide when do you want to share that inner, really personal piece of you. And it was my mom, and she didn't mean to be invasive or like in your face, but she found something. And I think it was, I would say the Sears catalog. I don't think you have Sears.
No, I'm familiar though.
Okay, it's a clothing store.
Dudes in underwear, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. It wasn't bras and panties.
It was
the men's section. Yeah, it was guys. So she confronted me about it.
Oh,
and
I
think I was still in high school. So let's say 16, okay. 17.
Yep.
So I kind of felt that the rugs like was pulled out of me.
Yeah.
And even though I had really liberal parents and they loved me and they didn't kick me out, the fact that the most important people in my life, I didn't get to sit down, have a glass of water and tell them in my own time, I felt like I was robbed of an experience.
Okay.
And especially was really hard because I wasn't prepared to answer question about it.
Yeah.
And she like bombarded me of questions because she's
concerned.
A mom.
Yeah.
And she's like a mama bear. What are you doing? What's happening? Are you going to contract HIV?
Yeah.
And you have to remember that happened like nearly 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like today where you say your parents, some parents are going to like plan a party and everything. It was a little bit rougher.
Yeah.
And I cry my eyes out because one of your favorite subject, but I felt very ashamed because I was the oldest. I wanted to my parents to really be proud of me. And because I had something that I could not change.
Yeah.
I felt like, I had a default inside of me, but my mom cried her eyes out also, and she hugs me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's still a beautiful experience, but there's still a little bit of bitterness and how it was done.
Yeah,
but
so
I think it wasn't. Yeah,
her extreme love and concern for you
exactly.
kind of overrode her
yes.
more gentle concern for how you were feeling about the way she was behaving. Yeah. I love the way you said "mama bear." I'm like, oh, she just went on a rampage because she wanted to protect you.
It's very true, and I thought it was important to share that because sometimes we hear coming out story and some are positive, some are negative, and I'm like a little bit in between.
Yeah, a lot of them are like this. A lot of them are like this. I think a lot of our moms cry and get upset from a place of love and concern. And so did you...
Yes, sorry.
No, no, it's
yes,
okay.
Go.
Oh, no, politeness battle. Oh, no, you're Canadian. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes. It's not only a stereotype, it's really real. Even in, when we travel the world, the first five times we say sorry, people will look at us like, you're Canadian. And I'm like, yes. But yeah, that's so.
Have you had a chance to tell your mom how you feel about those early experiences? Like,
not really, because I said I was feeling some bitterness at that moment, but now she was at my wedding, so I don't feel the need to have that conversation.
Okay, so not a big deal. Don't want to have the
conversation. No, not a big deal. Okay. And my dad was very, because my parents are very religious, we're Catholics.
Right.
I used to go to church every Sunday and everything.
Right.
And because we had so much, not so much, but we had some family issue, we were followed by a psychologist, a family psychologist, so that helped a lot.
Oh, good.
And I asked my dad, said, why are you accepting me so easily? Like, you see, the Bible tells you all horrible. But I mean, the Bible tells you different. Why are you accepting me like with closed eyes? And he told me, well, what I know of and what I feel, it's only love for my oldest son. That's all I can do. It's love you. And he reassured me. And my dad was maybe even faster to accepting the fact that I was gay than my mom.
Yeah.
Because I think my mom had to see her dream of what I was going to become, and the family, the wife, the picket fence, and that changed. So, she had to do that twice. She had to do that first time with my younger brother, who was autistic.
Right.
So she knew he wasn't to have like a full life that she wanted. And
well,
she
a
had
regular
to do,
life, you might say.
Yeah, regular life. And the same thing for me, because my life was going to be different.
Nice. Now, I hinted at a little story. Excuse me. My throat's a bit bleh today. I hinted at a little story that had to do with autism and gayness. I wrote the A Gay Man book, and one of my partner's work colleagues, now I've said it. Someone has an autistic son. These people know, but yeah, I don't think I've said too much. Someone has an autistic son, and they found out that I created the A Gay Man book. And from what I understand, this is the details. This kid is like 7, 8, something ridiculously young. Yeah, but is autistic. And I didn't know this for a while I was being told, oh, Ed, you've made a book that is about the gay or queer journey to self-acceptance and unconditional self-love and acceptance and that transformation and journey. You know, my son's gay. Might he be interested in it? And I was like, oh, hello. Whoa, how old's your son? He's like 7 or whatever. It's like something like that. I was like, oh, my God. Wow. Well, part of this book is kind of spicy, and it's really kind of 15 plus-ish, but you are the parent guardians. You know, books don't have a rating. Art doesn't have a rating. If you feel that this is developmentally appropriate for your child, you're welcome to have a copy with my blessing. And they decided that it was. Wow. And you've seen the book, I think. You know some of the sexy art in it. There's no like sexy sex, but yeah, there's some. The furries might turn him. That furry page is going to be infamous. It's kind of a BDSM, a little bit, real sexy scene. So I found out. It started falling into place. I was like, how does a 7-year-old come out as gay? And also, this is so ultra modern. And oh my God, they're involving me in my book. Like, it was a lot. I was like being bombarded by this stuff. But I was like, oh, he's autistic. So he's like not afraid to just say what he thinks. And he's a little bit funny compared to other general population kids. And so I think that the bits and pieces that I've heard is just like, he just is a feminine little gay boy. And then, and then he like saw something gay on TV, because there's like gay and queer characters in like kids' Disney shows and stuff these days. And one day, you know, this didn't awfully surprise the parents too much, but there was a day where he was like, oh, you know, daddy, mummy, there's two boys there. They're together. what is that? And they're like, oh, that's gay. Like, there are men who love men. He's like, that's me. That's me. I like boys. Right?
the power of representation.
Right.
And the huge successful of the serial Netflix Heartstopper.
Right.
And when you watch that show, there's like a piece of you that kind of gets fixed. And you're like, if I would have watched that when I was like questioning, when I was getting, had all those answers, that would help me a ton. And that exists today and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you how many times I watched it.
It makes me feel a lot too. This is relatively uncharted waters. These Gen Alpha kids, like post Gen Z, is Gen Z, oh my God. I'm just wiping my eyes now. Like, this dad wants my book because he wants nothing more than to try the best way he possibly can to give his son that he loves so much an appropriate, inclusive, loving childhood, including that his son has come out at like the age of 7. It's it's a lot.
I have that, but with Will and Grace. My parents would like, no, it was all we had.
Yeah, I know, right? I know, we're the same age.
Yes, exactly. So that's all we had, and because it was a comedy, people would like sit down, and it wasn't like, this is the gay agenda, you have to like it.
Yeah.
It was just funny. It was about life.
It introduced
life.
It more easily. Yeah.
Yeah, and it showed gay people, even if it was a little bit of problematic, with the fat joke, that was stuff that it kind of bugged me.
There's a few things about it that I don't know. It's edgy. It's edgy in its own way.
Exactly. But and also, it's a straight director writing gay stories.
Will, the actor, is straight as well.
Yes. And he's married and he's Canadian also.
All right.
Eric McCormack, I think.
Yeah.
The one who plays Will. But it was one of my favorite shows because I watched it when my youngest, not the one who's autistic, but my youngest brother, and he was straight and he would laugh to the jokes. And it was just a good way to show gay people as a positive light, even if it was a little bit clowny and it was a bit stereotypical, and it was a bit clowny, and it was a bit vapid.
And actually, Will is a terrible character. He just is fraught. Yeah.
But it also is because we were in the 90s, so it wasn't because, say, you can't compare like Will and Grace to Heartstopper.
No.
It's like, say, Heartstopper, they have like a real trans actress that plays the character, and it's beautiful. And I mean, say, you can, like, even Love, Victor, that I watched on Disney's
Love
Plus,
Victor.
And Love, Victor was the summum, say, it was the height of like quality and fun and that kind of stuff. And when Heartstopper, it kind of like create another level of like, oh my God, of quality and just perfection meeting.
you're so still 15 out of 10 about all things in life.
Yes.
You should bottle it for later, so you still got some later. Oh God. So
a good batch.
if Eric McCormack is listening, thank you so much for playing a character that meant so much to so many people. I do care that you're straight. I care about casting gay people in gay roles. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he had the bravery and courage to represent something that actually was extremely effective, appropriate for the time, you know, let's give all of this a benefit of the doubt. Thank you to him. Disney and Love, Victor, well done on making the transition from like gay to heteronormative gay a sweet and lovely one that includes underage people. And then Heartstopper's actually brought back the queer factor and like normalized queerness, not so much heteronormativity. And so this is this whole journey we've been on over the past couple of decades.
Yeah, and it's beautiful because we're not bitter that we didn't have that. It's just we appreciate more. It's like when I read your book for the first time, I told you this, there's a piece of me that got fixed because for the first time I saw my story. Of course, it wasn't 100% because we all have little quirks, a little difference. Yeah. But I there's so much, to when I saw like the guy getting older and watching himself in the mirror, it's like, oh my God, that's me. But that's what I related to more. But the book is so well done, and it's like a little piece of that can gives you hope, that gives you like, I'm seen, I can see myself, and it helps us as a community, but it helps us like just accepting who we are because we see example of that, and like, okay, this is okay, and it's really a crucial. It's really crucial and it's beautiful, and I'm so happy I have it.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. I can't believe there's some 7-year-old, 7-8-year-old out there that's got mom and dad like reading him a bedtime story, just like, it's my book and it's it's quite gay.
And that's the beauty of it.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's really special to me. This is my first reveal of that too. I don't know how to reveal that to Instagram, but I'm going to work on it. I'll make something about that. And speaking of, would you grab yourself with that scene that mattered to you and write down your words? We can both put it in the podcast post, but also maybe post it to the book page because those stories are my favorite where it really touches someone and they see themselves. Because that fixing that you described, that is so real. And it's the whole reason why I chose gay male, not human person, because when the art really hits, it really hits, and it's special and important.
And sometimes we walk with we kind of like not des blessures. Hurts. So we walk with hurts that we had from the past, and we don't even realize that we're still hurting from the
big
past.
Big time.
And it's really deep. And when you get those little bright moments, you're like, you kind of exhale a little bit more. You breathe a little bit better, and you're like, oh my God, I don't know. It's a magical stuff. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happened with your book. It happened with Love Victory. It happened with Heartstopper. It's little moments that just, I don't know. I think it's like, it brings more color to life.
And 100%, each time you're like, I get it.
And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm very happy. I was like showing to everybody, that's my book. It's like, you made it. I'm like, no. I mean, it's my coach made it. And I was telling everybody. So I was so proud. I'm like,
thank you. Yeah. Cause that guy in that scene, he's getting older, but he's also a big boy. Like he's got his hands on his big belly and he's very, he's overweight. I mean, I don't know. Does that weigh? Is that a loaded word? I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's a big boy. But he's got his hand on his guts and he's like, now I'm getting older. And that scene is, and that's okay with me.
Exactly.
It's about self-acceptance.
Exactly.
As you are.
Accepting as you are with your quirks, with everything that who you are. Because the better you know yourself, the better that you accept yourself, well, the brighter you're going to shine and the more people are going to be attracted to that. It's just logic.
100%. God damn it. Every time I interview an ex-client, I'm like, fuck, I'm so proud. Fuck me.
But it's true.
It's true. Like, it is true.
I don't want to be sentimental, but it's just
a big deal.
Magical thing.
This shit is a big fucking deal for us. It's
because
a big deal.
We share a journey together.
Yes.
And you were saying but with the experience and everything, you healed. I physically healed. I had like a hurt. I had something inside of me that I didn't know how to fix, and it got fixed. So that's our permanent evolution. It's permanent. So it's like a positive thing, and it's amazing. And it's not because it worked for me, meaning that it's going to work for everybody, but still it's just, like you said, it's just fucking amazing. And like, oh my God. And your weakness can become your
strength.
Your strength. 100%. And you're going to use that as a fuel. And yeah. you're going to shine so bright that you're going to say, oh, I'm powerful. I really am. Because the first time you said it, it's like, oh, powerful gay man.
I wasn't really.
Oh, I had my doubts. But. I did my work. I did my homework. I did the training. I did the work. And after that, I was like, oh yeah. But it's not like the next day I was fixed. Oh, I'm cured and I can do whatever I want. It was really slowly, but it was like transformative, and it was just an awesome experience. So I was so happy, and Jesus, I'm still.
Thank you. 15 out of 10. Oh God. Thank you very, very much. I just feel compelled to say, like, this is completely unsolicited, unplanned, honest feedback. And I love you, Chuck. Thank you. Now let wrench. I got one important question for you. This is going to be very personal. I haven't prepped you for it. You don't have to answer it. But does marriage mean strict monogamy for you and your partner or not? Nope. Or what?
Nope.
Okay. Tell me about that.
No, I'm very open about everything. And we even had a conversation with our closest friends. They're a straight couple.
Yeah.
And they're our witness to our wedding. And we had a discussion about, oh, if my boyfriend, my friend was telling me, oh, if my boyfriend look at another girl, I would be jealous, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. That's you. But me and my boyfriend, we have like different rules. We have different setting for a relationship. That doesn't mean that we sleep around. It just means that we share experience together. We're open and we have a communication. If he find that guy really hot, well, he's allowed to tell me that, and I'm like, what are you seeing in him? Like, so it's really a beautiful experience because we can share our views, and we're not restricted. So because I'm an Aquarius, but I want to feel free, but in the meantime I want to be like with a loving relationship. So maybe it doesn't make sense, but
is it just a view, or are you allowed to go out and have playtime with other people?
We're allowed, but if we're together.
Oh, okay.
And
cool.
It never takes precedence of our couple. So it's always experience that enrich your life, but never that's going to like be detrimental to our relationship. So we talk about it. And sometimes it's on the fly. So we go on a spa day or whatever. There's a guy that, oh, he's hot. We're always making a move. So we look at you. Do you want to do something? And we always have a common response. So if my husband say, oh, I don't feel it, it's like, I'm not going to force him. I want to. So our relationship is solid. It's always, our needs are met.
Yep.
So it's never to go get something that we don't have in our relationship. It's just something that we can do to spice things up. And it's beautiful because sometimes we're going to be years without anything happening, and that's okay. We're not missing it. It's just if ever there's an experience, there's something happening, well, at least we can talk about it, at least we can share. And it's I don't know, it's nice. Okay. I feel really liberated by that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Me and my partner have our special arrangements as well.
And I think that's important because one of the conversations we had during therapy, I felt that I didn't have a normal relationship. I didn't know how to fix it or whatever. And the truth is, I didn't have to fix it. I just had to accept it. Yeah. And the moment I accepted it, I felt so much better. I was like, I was so happy. And I'm like, okay, I can have the kind of relationship I want. And nobody has to tell me how it is or what to do.
The right thing to do, the quote unquote right thing. Yeah, exactly.
Because I felt maybe I felt ashamed. I was like, oh my God, I don't have a normal relationship. But what is a normal relationship?
Normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a loaded word.
Okay. Why don't you play a part? Why does it have to be together?
Obviously, that's a really good question, but it's the agreement that we made together, and I'm comfortable with that.
Because
anything that I can do by myself won't be as much fun as with my partner. And even when we have fun with somebody else, we can say, well, say the guy is just an accessory. It's like, it's like we don't even realize he's there. It's just me and my husband, and it's hot, and the guy's there. And it's like, oh yeah, you're there. So it's not like because it's just we're sharing experience, we're sharing a moment, and it's just it's our pleasure. It's like cool. So it's really nice, but that's
what you're ready for, and that's what you want right now. That seems to work for you. Is it a conversation that is still open, or is that like a locked-in commitment? Oh, okay.
It's always open. It's like we talked a lot about having children,
right?
And that's an open conversation.
Okay.
So I told him like you have a deadline. Like when I'm gonna be 40 years old, so in 2 years. The door is closing. Like you have 2 years, because I wanted to respect my needs. It's like it's something I'm interested, but not at any condition. This is my timeline. Okay. And he's like, okay with that. And
what are your options?
We're gonna adopt, or we're gonna get a surrogate, or whatever.
Oh, but are you actively investigating that?
No. No, for the moment, my husband and I decided to not have children, not because we don't love children, but because how our life is built.
This is not right now.
Exactly. And we have so much project, and we want to travel, and we want to do this. And I just changed jobs like last year. So financially, it wouldn't be wise to put a children in the middle of that.
Okay. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, there's that quote, it's never the right time.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a joke that I love from a guy called Tim Minchin, who's an Australian comedian that I love very, very, very much. He plays a lot of piano. he does this whole skit about it's never going to be the right time. We're never going to have enough money, you know, but everyone's sending us photos of their babies, and every day we get a new email or an Insta, there's another photo of another bundle of joy. Like, oh, come on, let's just do it. Let's just buy a digital camera.
I love that.
I guess for straight people, you know, babies can just happen, and then you make it the right time. So I suppose that still applies to you. You currently decided it's not the right time, but it doesn't mean it's not impossible. I guess we just have a very different experience of making babies.
And only say there's a part of me that will feel a little bit selfish to put a child with two dads, even if it's more accepted. It would be just harder for me to accept that and to have like my child like having like negative experience or just all this kind of stuff because of a decision I made. Yeah.
Oh, so. Well, that brings us tidily to my very happy section, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Are you ready for section 3?
Yeah, just a moment, Edward.
Sure, go ahead.
I'll need to go to the washroom.
Ah, cool. We'll pause here. Okay. I'll play a happy jingle.
Thank you.
See you soon.
I'm so sorry about that.
No problem. I bet you are sorry.
Yeah, but I had just drank a bunch of tea and it was wonderful, but the bladder was full.
All right. Did you have a nice wash in the washroom?
Yes, I washed my hands and everything.
Wouldn't it be shameful to have to urinate out of your penis? It would be. You'd have to apologize for that, surely.
No.
It's too late.
I don't want to.
You already did.
Yeah, I know.
Alrighty. Oh, Section 3, here we go. So I love to talk about deep human stuff and gay shame. I know it can be uncomfortable or difficult, but I think it's extremely natural, extremely important to our personal growth, self-esteem, confidence, and life satisfaction. So without disclosing anything you don't want to, Do you harbor any shame today? What's shame like today?
I would say that I still sometimes feel shame because of sometimes we can all lose our temper and we can say something and I'm like, oh shit, I shouldn't have said that. So sometimes we all feel a normal emotion to feel, but I would say that
don't
I
externalize it. What's your shame? Or like, what's your relationship to your shame?
My shame.
Wait, you get angry sometimes? Is that it?
I get angry, but sometimes I feel ashamed of the stuff that happens. It's part of my subject I'm going to talk about later. But disorder.
Right. Well, let's bring that in now. Let's wrap them together.
No problem. That's why I was like kind of. It's last year I came to terms with the fact that I had an eating disorder. I'm a binge eater. I have a binge eater disorder, meaning that I have sometime food rage. And last year I went to a therapy, group therapy about it. And there's a lot of shame with having an eating disorder because it's kind of a painful like circle that you try to restrict your because I'm a chubby guy and you could even say I'm overweight. So the main goal was always I have to lose weight. Have to lose weight at any condition, even putting my life at risk. It doesn't mind as long as I'm skinny. So and the society is slowly changing with that, but eating disorder are really often associated with girls, which girls are more often impacted by that than men, but that doesn't mean that men cannot have eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I love Heartstopper is that Charlie has an eating disorder. He's anorexic. So when I saw that on TV, I'm like, oh my God, it's not the same eating disorder, but it's the same pain that you want to restrict, you want to control sometimes. Your life feels uncontrollable, so the only thing you can control is what you eat. So I felt that, and I was lucky that I had a stable partner, someone who was always on my corner. There was never judgment. It was like, what is happening and how can I help you?
He was seeking to understand.
Yes And it was a stepping stone, but it wasn't his job to fix me.
No.
Sometimes we have this wrong view of love that if you have a partner, he's going to fix you, everything's going to be okay. The power of love, and that's not okay because it's not his job. It's really demanding of a partner to like, listen, I don't know what's happening, you have to help me. And I'm just like, I'm not a therapist, I cannot help you with that. So my best friend also had the same eating disorder that I had. And she just started to see unhealthy eating habits that would restrict my water. I would stop drinking water at certain point of time in the day. So because I weighed myself like, I think 15, 20 times a day. And it was like always a battle, always. And she started having an open conversation, telling Charles, I don't think that what you're doing is healthy. I think you should look into it. And she let it go. She didn't push it. She didn't shove like brochures in my throat. She just said, if there's anything you want to talk about it, just tell me anything and I'll be there. And she gave me the name of a group that was helping with people with an eating disorder.
Yep.
And I started with that. And it was really beautiful. It was one of the best decisions I made because I learned why I was doing it and just to accept wholly who I am so I can. And it's also about putting limits because sometimes I became kind of a people pleaser. So I would always have no limit to help others, but I didn't know how to help myself. So I was always like on the low end of the list. Mm. So I start to help that. And there was another guy also in my group. And just to have another guy in my group, I'm like, okay, I'm not alone. There's another guy there. Mm. And say we can help each other. And so it's really, it was a battle. It was something I did. And there was a lot of shame. And when you ask, what's your relationship to shame? Mm. Well, I'm not perfect. Sometime I'm gonna fall. Sometime I'm gonna wake up in the middle of the night, mm. and I'm gonna want to empty half the fridge. But that doesn't mean I'm weak. That doesn't mean that I'm disgusting. That doesn't mean that I'm a pig. It's just something that happens. But I try to be really kind to myself, and it happened less and less. Mm. And my relationship with shame, I treat it as a guide. When I feel shame, I'm like, oh, hello there. What are you trying to tell me? Mm. Why am I feeling like this?
There you go. And I now you're seeking to understand, right?
Yes.
But it's towards yourself.
Yes. And I accept it, and then I let it go. And it sounds really simple, but it's fucking
no, it's hard. It's hard as fuck.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's but super hard.
I would say that I'm doing better. I'm still in contact with other members of the group because the group has finished. Mm. But we still keep on contact. We still send pictures of what our project, what do we do. And it's kind of fun to still have that link with other with the other of the group.
Nice.
But it's a beautiful thing, but it's when you talk about shame, shame is always associated with food because it's
all body size, shape, yes, weight.
Yes, because sadly in the rainbow community, especially in gay men, the image that are portrayed is always about top models and like nearly Greek gods body. And when you're like a questioning teenager and you don't look like that, it's really hard for your self-esteem, like trying to where do I fit in that. And thank God it is changing. There's more and more businesses that put like plus size models and or just regular guys, and it helps. But it's something that I have to deal with. I have to control my social media, making sure there's all type of body, not only like perfect body, because I like a muscular guy like the next one. But it's important that it's not just that.
Yeah.
So
and I guess in your exploration of all of this, one of the big questions is always, am I accepting and loving and supporting myself unconditionally? Am I being my own best friend? Because if you're not, you've got some shamey reason that you're rejecting yourself.
I can love my partner exactly like he is.
Yeah.
And I think he's perfect and he's the most beautiful guy in the whole world. Mm. But when he tells me, you look sick as fuck, if I don't know how to accept it, it's like the compliment hits my body and falls down.
Yeah.
I wasn't receiving it. So I started to like, because if I was like an ugly, disgusting person.
Yeah.
Well, why would he be with me? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. He must be lying to me.
Yeah, exactly. And it creates all kind of barriers and limits and all kind of stuff. But thank God we have a few rules that we have each other, is that we're not allowed to talk badly about ourselves. I tell you, sometimes we joke and we say, "Oh, I'm dumb" or whatever. But if ever the other one is in the prison, we see each other and he says something, I'm like, "Nope, do not dare, because I think so highly of you. I do not want to hear anything negative about yourself."
Mm.
I cannot control what you think, but it's kind of like a positive. Say, of course, sometimes we have crappy day, and of course, but it's kind of a positive. Like, I want you to feel the best of who you are because of what you are and because of what you do, and not because of the size of that you are.
Yeah.
So,
would you say it's still fair to have self-reflection, possibly even self-criticism, like hopefully constructive, but it's not okay to have unconstructive, just purely negative, self-deprecating commentary. So that's the kind of stuff you're catching, right? With your clicking, nope.
Yeah, but I have problem with people that are doing that. It sometimes that we're not talking about a comics that makes jokes, and we're not talking about that. We're talking about our friend, a colleague, or family member, and he's really telling bad things about himself. And I'm a piece of shit, and I feel very uncomfortable when people do that
in front of you.
And if it's not somebody that I know a lot, I'm gonna intervene and say, I'm sorry, but you shouldn't talk to yourself like that. Because I think you're a great person. I don't know you as well. Maybe one day I will, but I think you deserve better, and you should talk to yourself like kinder. And usually people are not offended by that because you just want to share love. You just send positive light, and people sometimes, oh yeah, you're right. I didn't realize I was being mean to myself.
Yeah,
and I'm like, especially if someone that you know a little bit more, like a coworker or a friend or a family member, I was like, I know, I love you. It's like, why are you talking to yourself like that? Mm. And it's like, and sometimes people don't even realize it.
Yeah, that is a beautiful thing to do for people, Chuck. And thank you for being the friend to people when they don't know how to be their own best friend. I'm going to be that guy for just a second and just twist the word should. I would say, please don't talk like that. To me, it doesn't feel fair or reasonable or kind to you. And it hurts me to see people hurting themselves unnecessarily. So I wouldn't say you should or shouldn't do A, B, C, X, Y, Z, but I'd just say, would you please not, be so harsh and self-denigrating, at least in front of me, because it's hurting me. But I'm a big boy. Just thanks for being aware that you're actually denigrating yourself. And I really don't want you to, because I like you a lot and I think you're worth it.
And sometimes people just want a hug, because I think hugs are really underrated. We should hug more.
Yeah.
And especially if there's a good intent. It's not like...
There's that should again. You said should, though.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
And you would like people to hug more.
I would like people to hug more because I think you cannot give a hug without receiving one. And I think it's really, you share love and you feel love, and it's just a beautiful thing. And I got a lot of hugs when I got married. So
yeah,
that's why I'm full of love right now.
Hug therapy, you should found
it. Yeah, hug therapy. But I read somewhere that to strengthen your evolution or your emotional needs, you need around 4 to 7 hugs a day or something like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I'm like,
I don't mind saying, talking about shame or whatever, I work from home alone. I have extremely limited physical contact with, my social circle. I got my board games group once a week, love those people. And I do hug them. And I'm not a big hugger, to be honest. But yeah, I do. I suffer the consequences of a form of physical and social isolation of working from home. And, just because you work from an office or outside or in a team doesn't mean you have a lot of connection with those people. But I definitely don't. And I noticed that. It's a real thing for me.
But you have a cat. So
oh, my God, I do. And I hug them every day. And they've learned to love it. And they do love it. I'm pretty sure.
That's why I have a big dog. It's like she's 140 pounds. And when I hug her, it's like hugging a human being.
Yeah.
She's so big. Awesome. And she loves it.
That's awesome. All right. Can I bring us to our final round now then? Thank you for sharing your truth and your story and some of those things that can be extremely difficult. A huge part of me wants to just give you 2 hours to talk in depth. Are you able to mention, if someone out there listening in particular does have a food and eating related disorder, are there any key resources you would point them to, what to Google or where to start?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. I would give them, if ever somebody, I'm going to start with people that notice, because often, like my best friend did, sometimes we notice like different like stuff about people. And sometimes we're like, oh, is that person is okay? So I'm going to say the best thing you can say to someone, if you think that maybe they have an eating disorder, is just to be non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Because if you go there and you're like, oh, I think you're skinny, you should eat more.
Yeah.
You're not going to help anybody.
You look fucked.
Exactly. It's like when people tell
you look so fucked, get help.
Exactly.
Oh, so helpful. Thank you.
It's like people that tells you, you got fat. It's like, are you overweight? Are you okay? It's like, don't you think I have mirrors at home? People think, oh, I did a good action. Did you really? Because sometimes people are going to hear that and they're going to end up at McDonald's and just eat the crap out of life. Just
because of what somebody, you said. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You can approach it in another version. Like,
yeah,
be a bit more sensitive. I feel that your energy is lower. Are you okay? Or just and tell them, like, listen, I noticed some things. I just wanted to tell you that I am there. Just so if you people would be kinder to one another and just tell her, if ever you need to talk to somebody, I can be that person.
Yeah.
I may not be able to help you exactly with what it is, but at least I can help you a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's going to change life. And it changed my life because I had somebody that just made the first move, we should say.
All right, to make some changes. Nice. You know, I would
I'm going to say it's a resource. I have like Canadian resource and resource in Quebec, but I don't have like international resource.
Well, I think it's fair to say, everyone listening, if you're concerned that you have an eating disorder, please Google something like eating disorders and then your local area. Help for eating disorders country.
I saw a lot of good videos also on YouTube about information like eating disorder in men, and there's a lot of like there's a lot of content. But if people do their own research, they're gonna ultimately they're gonna end up with something that's gonna help them with what their transition or how their path that they're on right now.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, seek out a friend or a loved one to open up to and say, hey, there's a really difficult conversation. Can I have a difficult conversation with you? And if you're that person's friend, just as Chuck is saying, I kind of want this to be a general community announcement. Kind of, if you feel steady, secure, and ready to have difficult conversations with your friends or loved ones or anyone, maybe just wheedle that into a conversation with your people at any time. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I'm not a therapist. I might not be able to help you with anything. But if there is ever something difficult you want to talk about, you can talk about difficult things with me anytime or whatever your rules are. But, you know, if you don't feel ready, don't. Don't too.
And that's an excellent advice, because that's what I did when I was doing group therapy. And then when I nearly finished group therapy, we started to work together. I had really my plate was full, so I had friends sometimes that had issues and that kind of stuff, and I would just give the phone to my boyfriend, my husband, I would say, and he would deal with it because my plate was full.
Right.
But now that I'm a more secure place and I feel better about myself, I'm a head on 100% there, and it was just a beautiful feeling when the tide changed a little bit, and I had my best friend who had a hard day, and she called me in tears, and I'm like, okay, I'm capable, I'm able, and it was a beautiful thing, and she was like, oh, thank you so much.
Yay.
And she cried, and she made me cry, so we all cried of tears, and it was beautiful.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, excellent. Thank you very much for sharing everything and just being yourself and being honest and living a human life. Do you want to go into the zany question round? I've made a whole new one.
Yay!
Oh, this is a nice moment to just pause. I have, you know, rebooted Gaberhood. I think this is the fourth episode of the quote unquote new season. Might be the fifth. I'm taking it real casual. But yeah, I've been scheduling them wrong, so they've been coming out at funny times. I apologize. It's going to attempt to be every second Monday from now on. I learned how to schedule things. I'm just human, having a human life. And I've designed some new zany questions. The last episode didn't have any, so here's the new section.
I'm a little bit disappointed because I was really prepared with the other questions.
No, they're good. Okay. I'm glad I changed them. No, they have to be secret. That's the funny
thing. I know. But I was like secretly training.
Centaurs or mermaids? Centaurs or mermaids?
Yeah. Mermaids, 100% mermaids.
Nah, we've heard it before. It's boring now.
But I'm ready.
All right, here we go. In your next life, would you rather be a frog, a moth, or a lemur?
A lemur was, isn't like the animal that spit?
Oh, no, lemurs are like King Julian from that animated series with the lion. God damn it. Lemur.
I'll take the frog.
Okay, you saved me. Lemurs are like ringtail possum type things.
Okay, you know
Madagascar? And, there's that character, King Julian?
Yeah.
He's a lemur.
Lemur. Okay, I'm sorry.
So frog, moth, or lemur?
Frog. I imagine like being in a pond.
Yep, and just chilling.
And if somebody kissed me, I become a prince. So.
Great. Would you be a sexy one? Or yes. No big deal?
I'll be a sexy
be
one.
Be a sexy frog? A yeah, great.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Ooh, these are pretty hard hitting. We'll see how we go. On a hotness scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate yourself?
That's a good question.
Just try to answer it quickly. Try if it's okay. You can skip it if you want to.
I would say 9 out of 10.
9. Yes. Yeah. How about me?
Oh, you're a 10 out of 10.
Oh, honey. Stop it. What's your okay? How about this? What's your ideal number on the scale for your partner or partners?
Well, that number doesn't exist. It's like 100.
So 100 would be best, or your partner is 100 out of 10.
My partner is 100.
Okay,
I would tell him that he's my personal top model.
Oh, gorgeous. Yeah. So. In your opinion, what's the worst thing, if there is one, about gay culture?
Ooh, I could talk a lot about that. I think it's
just pick one. Pick one you hate.
Inner homophobia.
Oh.
Sometimes we're homophobic about themselves. We're gonna see like someone who's really effeminate, and it's like, oh, did you see him? Did you see how he acted? How he talked?
Yeah.
And it's something that we shouldn't do. I'm the first one sometimes to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm working on it. And nice. I'm sure I'm going to check just to be like more accepting and just accept people for who they are.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you've reminded me because this is something I wrote down that I didn't quite say earlier. You know, the question is about gay culture, quote unquote, gay culture. Mm-hmm. I don't think our body shaming is a cultural thing. This is a bit of a gray area. I think our internalized homophobia and shame, unavoidable shame from early years, turns us into self-critics. And one of the things that it's easy to police and criticize is our body. And that is probably why gays have got this reputation for being like, you know, sexy, svelte, go to the gym a lot. Because we fucking hate ourselves and we're dealing with that.
That sounds really truthful.
We don't all hate ourselves. These are big statements, but I think that is the central origin. This isn't a cultural thing. We're all like, oh, yeah, we love great bodies. Like, we're just going to – that's our jam, man. Like, we love it. I think it's a byproduct of negative consequences of, understandable situations. Cool. Thanks.
I like that. I like the way you've worded because it sounds true. I think I got a better understanding of it, and I think it's really true.
And have you seen as well, they're actually, well, I'm in Melbourne, heartland of, you know, lefties and lovely people. There actually is a ton of body positivity in the gay culture, and you're kind of an example of that now, you know, and this episode is an example of this.
I would say so, but I would just point out that it's kind of recent also.
Yeah.
Because when I was coming out and when I was like exploring my sexuality, I was in the end of the 90s, like start of the 2000.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as common.
Right.
But you still had the letter bearers and everything. But I think that more and more as we continue, there's going to be more and more divorced bodies.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it a lot. And I think it's really positive. And I think everyone that has different bodies will kind of see themselves.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to accept themselves a little bit faster.
Nice. What's the best thing about gay culture?
Sleeping with men.
Hooray!
Yay!
Do you remember your dreams?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Any especially memorable or recent ones?
I dreamt that when I was going to be 40 years old, I'm going to go back to Paris, France, and I'm going to kiss my boyfriend near the Eiffel Tower.
All right.
And we actually yes, and we're actually planning a trip for my 40th birthday.
Oh, lovely.
And my best friend is French also. She comes from France. So.
Oh, nice. Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So dreams can come true.
Yeah, you can make them true. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. You're so like coked up on love. Like, it's crazy. Yes.
I'm like a junkie.
Yeah, you really are. When Saturn returns, do you get excited?
Saturn,
the planet.
Saturn.
Yeah, so you're an Aquarius. Really. Like when Saturn returns, I don't even know what it means. Do you get excited?
No.
Why not?
No, because I'm really into esotericism, so I do tarot reading, and I like to know what people are signs are. What is your astrological sign?
Ooh, I'm an Aries.
Ooh, that's nice.
Okay.
So anyway, so I like to have that kind of reaction and I like it, but I also have this ground to earth kind of, I have like this dual personality that helps me get grounded. So I like a little bit of hocus pocus, but I still like to be in the real world at the same time.
Yeah, nice.
So even if people say, oh, there's a Mercury retrograde, I will be in.
Yeah.
I'm still going to get my coffee. So I don't feel as much as an impact about it.
Nice one. All right. So I've got three either ors for you. Communism or capitalism?
Capitalism.
Spider-Man or Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, Spider-Man, 100%.
Milkshakes?
Those tights.
Milkshake or bubble tea?
Bubble tea. I love bubble tea.
All right. Fantasy or sci-fi?
Fantasy.
Yeah. Sexually?
Always.
Any recommendations?
About fantasy?
Sexy fantasy content?
Something with Cthulhu?
Sorry.
Tentacles. It's a mythical creature. It's kind of a big octopus.
Oh, sorry. When I do fantasy versus sci-fi, I mean like Tolkien, elves, orcs.
Oh, okay. So elves.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, cool. Do you have any sci-fi, fantasy, elf, sexy content recommendations for the world out there?
Not really. Except a few fan fiction about Legolas and...
Ooh.
Yes.
Google it yourself, you scoundrels.
Yes. And I got a few books on Amazon. It's called The Dragon and the Prince, and then it's The Phoenix and the Prince.
Ooh.
And it's there's four books.
Are they romances?
No, they're really smut book.
Oh, full-on smut book. Okay, great.
Yeah, it's the kind of book that I started blushing because I was reading it. I was reading it at my workplace, but nobody read English, so I was safe. But still, but you indulge it, and
yeah.
My boyfriend, my husband, bought it for me, so he's like, "How do you like it?
Ooh.
The books are hot." And he's like, "Yeah,
that's fun. That is fun."
Yeah, I love it.
Good for you too. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, last one. We've already disclosed this, but do you love me?
Yes, yeah. I love you, and you always have a place in a little piece of my heart.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. You too. I love you too. And same goes. You're very special to me.
The same as you.
Well, that brings us to an end, my friend. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and I wish you well not only today, but for the entirety of the rest of your existence on planet Earth.
Yay!
All right, see you next time.
Bye.
Alrighty, that's going to do us for Charles Peltier. I can't do it. I'm sorry. He's a delightful fellow. I hope you really loved that. As always, you can get in touch with us at edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com via email. We are at Gayborhood Podcast on Instagram. And if you in particular are a person of color and you want to talk about both the intersection of race and gayness in your native culture, whether that's Asian, Latin American, just something that isn't white and Western, it's something that's been lacking. And personally, I do kind of believe in the power of quotas and representation. I think it's very important. So either get in touch on Insta or email me. If you reckon that you would like to be a regular guest on the show, come on down. I'll meet you. We'll have a 15-minute meet and greet and chat and just explore it together. There are prepped show notes so that you don't need to be afraid. And hopefully we'll get you and your awesome story and your fabulous self onto Gayborhood soon. Don't be a stranger. Take very good care of yourself. I love you. Is that weird? Email me if that's weird. Otherwise, don't. And just love yourself. Have a great day. From me and Comet, signing out. See you next time. Bye-bye. Show noises. This is the bit where I make strange noises at the end. If you love them, email me. It's edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com, and I'll let you in on a little secret. No one has ever emailed me at edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com. Oh, won't you please send me an email? I sit here all lonely with a cat, and she keeps me good company, but I want your emails. Are you out there, people?